Yeah, I grew up out there. I learned a lot of things that the Lord would eventually use in my life to remind me of. I grew up on a farm, you know, and one thing that I learned on a farm is that you have to work really hard to sustain life, you know. You got to water things, and you got to feed things, and you've got to mend fences, and you got to do all of these things. That nothing, if you do nothing, death will happen, right? Death happens when nothing is done, you know. And so one thing that the Lord's always taught me, and I'm very grateful for growing up out in Goochland, is that when we're obedient to the things that He calls us to, He brings about life, you know. And it's a beautiful thing to labor and to nurture and to love and to feed and to water and to offer hope, you know, to something that needs you, you know. And it brings joy to your life. And that's kind of my story and that I want to share with you guys today. As I hope that this will encourage you guys in whatever God's already doing in your life, that it will be something that will offer hope and inspiration to push on and push deeper into the things of Christ and to know more about who He is and what He's doing in your life and how He specifically wants to use your life individually and corporately as this body to do great things to offer life to a world that's very much in need of life, that right now is dying. I want to start off by telling you guys that I got saved at 21. I had a typical non-believer background, I was married, and I had a child, which is one of the things that led me to the Lord, right? And in this process, I learned that I really didn't know what it meant to be a dad, and I didn't know what it meant to be a husband. And so I went into the Bible for the first time going, you know, I didn't grow up around this. I didn't know what this was. You know, I didn't see this very often. I didn't go to church. I didn't, you know, I was very much an unchurched person in my family. Was very much the typical by Christian. If you were to ask them, they would say, oh, yeah, we're Christian, you know. But that meant absolutely nothing in our life at all, okay? So at 21 years old, I learned what this was. And it became, oh man, I wouldn't leave home without it. I wouldn't do anything. The life-giving joy that came from what was inside of these pages and how it meant to be a father and meant to be a husband and meant to shape and mold my life, you know, to literally be that lamp where you're looking down. You're going, I have no clue what it means to be a husband, what it means to be a dad. I'm new at this. I'm barely making it, you know, to go, I need something. And then to really find that this is true and meaningful in your life, it just set me and my wife on a course that was, I wish I could tell you, nothing but joy and happiness and easy, but it wasn't. It set us on a course where we got to be and live with what Jesus was doing, and that brought joy, you know. I mean, we've had a lot of struggles as a family and have done a lot of things that were very difficult. But Jesus was always in the midst of it as we were being obedient to the things that He was calling us to, you know. And so that brought about joy. To speed ahead, when I became a believer, I love Jesus so much. I just want other people to know about Him. I knew nothing. I mean, I knew absolutely nothing. So I just go, I was like, hey, you really got to know about this guy, Jesus. He's changing my life. It's crazy. I mean, have you ever heard about Him? And, you know, my friends, I'm taking classes at J. Sarge at the time. And they look at me like, what is wrong with you? Like, yeah, we've heard of Jesus. And I was like, no, like, have you heard about Him? Like, do you understand? Like, there's things that I didn't know. I grew up for a long time. I didn't know. I just want to make sure you know about Him. And they're like, well, tell me some. I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm just learning too. Let's go learn together, you know. And through this process at J. Sarge, I was in a program where we all took classes together for 2.5 years. We had to take all of the classes together. And by the end of the program, they were like, yeah, He's the Jesus guy, you know. But in that, you know, I saw some classmates come to faith, you know, that really fell in love. And 288, we used to have to drive down to Iron Bridge all the time to take one specific class, a lab class down there. And one of the kids says to this day, 288 changed my life. Because while we're riding down 288 together, I was just reading this going, hey, man, Do you ever see this? Like, this is crazy. Do you understand this? I don't understand it, but that's awesome. Like, I want to explore that. We should look at that, you know? And he would say 288 changed his life, you know? So through my early parts of coming to know Jesus, I just wanted to know what He had for our life and how I could serve and love Him, you know? We're riding actually right at the stoplight, right up here by Wells Fargo. I'm sitting at the stoplight, and a girl pulls up beside me that I went to high school with. Anyone who knows me in high school knew I was crazy, like legitimate crazy. So she pulls up. She motions me to roll my window down. She's like, hey, I just became a believer. I want to tell you about Jesus. And I'm like, hey, I just became a believer. Come over and hang out with me and my wife, right? This girl would eventually go on to being one of the team leaders for our South Asia team right now that's living and serving in South Asia. She speaks Hindi and Urdu, and they have Bible studies going on in Muslim with Muslims right now in a city of 2 million people that has probably less than 90 believers in a city of 2 million people right now. And that happened right at the intersection up here. And the story that I'm going to keep telling you, it started from just saying, God, I know you have something for my life. I know you're calling me to obedient to things. And I know when I do those things, I'm going to experience you in ways that are going to change me forever, that are going to be so good for my life and my soul, but it's also going to make a difference in this world. So she came over to her house, and me and my wife are sitting there, and we're just sharing our stories. She's like, yeah, this is what Jesus did in my life. We're like, yeah, he did that in my life too, and this is awesome. What should we do? Let's invite all of our friends and just tell them about it, you know? And so we did, and we had no clue what a house church was. It was years later when we learned what a house church was, but that's what happened. We naturally clustered together. We were meeting in our homes. We were breaking bread together. We were sharing the word. We were encouraging each other. We were giving sacrificially. We were living with Jesus as the center. No Bible teaching at this point, no nothing. This is us just literally coming to the Word. So then when I went through a missions training school later on, I was like, let's call it a house church? We did that for a long. That's awesome. Like, wow, that's a real model. I like that. You know, go Jesus, right? And so, you know, so that's what we did. We started naturally clustering together. Several of our friends passed from high school that we got into a lot of trouble with, ended up coming into the kingdom, serving Jesus, still serving Jesus to this day through that experience. But we did something bold. Okay, we did something really bold. One night, me and my wife knelt down in our living room. We had one son. My wife was very pregnant, about to have another kid. And we knelt down together, and she said, you know, you get to go, and you get to share a lot, and you get to see people constantly. But I'm a nanny, and I don't get to see a lot of people, you know. I've got this little kid and our kid, and they just mumble at me all day. You know, it's hard for me to meet people. I want God to use me. So will you pray with me that God would bring someone into our life? Would you pray with me tonight that God would bring someone into our life? And so I said, yeah, let's do that. So we knelt down on our floor. I'll never forget it. Facing the couch. Our little baby's in one of those little bouncy things that, you know, they're to the left. And we knelt down together and we prayed this simple prayer that said, God, my wife has a desire for you to use her. And I know that you can bring someone in her life to do that. That's all we prayed. Right? That night we went to bed. I got up every morning about 4:30, 5 o'clock to go spend a little time in the Word and then to get ready to go to work pretty early. And so that morning, I left my cell phone charger out in the car. And at 5:15, I walked out of my front porch in Western Goochland to go to the car to get my cell phone charger. And there's literally a barely dressed girl standing on our front porch. Okay, she has two articles of clothing on, and it is cold. It's like, I mean, it's cold, right? And I opened the door. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. So I did the natural response. I shut the door. I'm not going to over-spiritualize it. That's what I did, you know? I can't remember. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, you know? I opened the door. I look, and I just shut the door. And I'm like, who is on my front porch? And I live out in a community house, like way out in the middle of nowhere, okay? And I thought about it. I said, well, I don't know what to do. I guess I should go get my wife. You know, so I go get her, and we let her in, and this girl had walked for miles, just so happened to walk for miles down a road, barely dressed, to show up at our door in the middle of nowhere, Goochland County. And she was crying. She said, "I don't know what to do. They've taken my kids. They've taken them away from me. I've been addicted to drugs now for many years, and social services has taken my kids. And they told me if I don't change my life, I'll never get them back." Okay. So me and my wife say, well, we prayed last night. This is probably from the Lord. I guess we should go ahead and do this, you know. So we take her in. And we love her, and we take care of her, and we're there for her, and we serve her, and we try to help her get her life back together. We're studying the Word together, you know. And she had ups and downs and everything in between. Some days she would leave and wouldn't come back for several days. Other days she'd come, and she'd be there. And we learned a lot through that process. But eventually, what was happened was she ended up making some very bad choices in that process and getting connected with a guy who they communicated to us that she became pregnant, and so we said, we don't know what to do. The guy didn't have a job, but he's willing to help. She gets locked up for drug use again, and he says, that's my kid, will you help me get her out of jail? Okay, so this introduces me to a guy named Chubby. Okay, I don't know if that name means anything to you guys. This guy's name is Chubby, Irvin Chubby Martin. Okay. You remember in 2007, Goochland made it on the news, right? There's a guy in Gum Springs took a fire poker and beat a girl almost to death. His name was Irvin Chubby Martin and went on a 9-month manhunt for him. He was on America's Most Wanted for 9 months because of what he did in Goochland County. He's one of my closest friends at the time. We lived together. We hung out together. We were in the Word almost daily. We helped him get a job. We try to help him get back on his feet. We try to help him get off the drugs. We try to help his pregnant girlfriend get her life back together. And it was very difficult for our family. We gave all of our money we had saved up for a house. We gave it away to try to get them set up. Finally, we got Chubby to a point where he was living on his own, and he moved in with my brother-in-law, actually. Got his own apartment style. It was half of the house and got set up. And unfortunately, I wish I could say the story ended positive, but it didn't. I know it ended very bad. And he's still in prison to this day, and I pray for him a lot. But we made ourselves available to make life happen in someone's life. And we're not responsible for the outcome. Right? We're not responsible for the outcome. The girl that was in that story ended up moving back in with two other guys who would eventually be charged with accomplice to murder. One of the guys killed the other guy in Goochland County a few years ago, and she would be arrested to lose another kid to social services and is in prison. I don't know what's going on with her life to this day, but we pray for her, right? But we learned something from that process. We learned that Jesus is faithful, and he calls us to be obedient, and he's there, and we experienced him a lot. We grew a lot in that way, and how we wish the story was different, it didn't. So in 2007, we bought a house. In November, 3 months after we bought a house, I went on a missions trip, and I heard about unreached people groups, and I heard that there was 1.7 billion people in the world that didn't have access to Jesus, that there was no one living around them to even say, this is who Jesus is. And I said, well, if I believe this book, and it says what it says, then I have to do something about that. Our family has to do something about that. So I called my wife from Houston Airport, and I said, hey babe, I know we just bought a house, and I know I've got a good job now, and I know you have a good job, and I know we're working our way up here. We've got two kids and the dog, and we have all of these things. But I really feel like if we continue down this road, we may end up not experiencing Jesus to his fullest because we'll get distracted by these things, right? And she said, oh, I'm so glad you said that. While you were gone, I was unpacking a box, and I found a journal from when I was 17, and I went on a missions trip. And she said, on that missions trip, God spurred on my heart and said, don't settle for the things of this world. I'm going to call you one day to go out and serve me. And she said, and I was expecting this phone call. So I'm sitting in Houston Airport in a wheelchair because it happened to be sitting there, and there's nowhere to sit down. Don't judge me. It wasn't someone's wheelchair. It was just a random wheelchair that was sitting there. So I sit down in it. I'm crying. I'm just like, oh, God, you're so good. I was so afraid to tell her. I'm so glad you told her. You know, my husband is, tell your wife you want to move to a little village in the middle of nowhere with no running water and all of these things. And from her nice house she just bought 3 months ago. I was scared. I'm not going to lie. I was scared to tell her that. But God went ahead and he told her that. And so I'm crying and she's crying. We get home the very next day. We make plans and we start living simple. And, you know, and it took us 6 months. We worked so hard to pay off any debt that we had. And, you know, and we also worked so hard just to get rid of all of our stuff and downsize. We found people to rent the house. We just bought the house 3 months earlier. We couldn't sell it. Yeah. And so we rented the house out, and we moved to this little town called Tlaquiaco in the middle of Oaxaca, Mexico, working with unreached people groups. And there's seven little villages that were around our town. And our family, we started engaging, joining a church planting team there, and saw a whole family down there come to faith. My wife's one of the best church planters I've ever met because she cares about people a lot. And that's all that it is. I mean, if you have the heart, if you have the capacity to love someone, you can be a disciple maker. You can be a church planner. All it takes, that's all it takes, is to sit down with someone, have a cup of coffee, and say, what's God doing in your life? You know, that's it. We have a missionary training school every week. That's what we talk about. Hey, well, you should pray about this, see what God's telling you, and see what He's doing in your life. And then you should meet people and see what they're doing in their life. And I'm sure God's going to intersect that somewhere, you know. That's all disciple-making is. So we saw a whole family come to faith down there, and they were baptized and discipled and mentored and loved really well. And then they started reaching out to more of the unreached people groups, right? And then God called us to come back to America to serve in Clarkston, Georgia, which is the most diverse square mile in America. And our family and another family went there to plant a location for our organization. And within 5 years, it went from our two families. We have about 50 full-time people there right now in just that one location. And from that location, we've sent teams to North Africa. We've sent teams to Australia. We're sending teams to South Asia. We've already sent teams to South Asia. We're launching LA, Chicago. We're launching Richmond here. We have a Houston that's set up, working with hundreds of Muslim families through ESL programs in Houston. We're working in business as missions platforms, creating economic situations, fair trade businesses in places where people wouldn't have access to funds to provide for your family. And the money that they make from that also empowers them to send their kids to school. They scholarship all of the families that work for this business. They scholarship all of their kids to get a good education, you know. You know where that rooted from? A stoplight right up the street here. A girl and a guy that got married. Another girl that God just intersected us in the same path to say, God, I think You want to use my life. I'm willing to let go. That's all it took. So in Clarkston right now, we've seen Nepalese plant their own churches. We have 5-6 generations deep. We're not even sharing the gospel anymore with Nepalese down there because we've seen so many Nepalese come to faith that they're actually outreaching their own communities. We had a witch doctor, a Nepali witch doctor, who took, he was like, wow, this Jesus is true. If this is all true and I believe this, then I'm a part of this kingdom. We're like, yeah, you're part of this kingdom. He was like, so what, should I like get baptized now? We're like, yeah, do you want to? Like, that's up to you, man. Do you want to do that? And he's like, yeah, I'll do that. He's like, can I take my idols with me? And I'll just throw them in the river. Is that cool? And we're like, yeah, that's cool, man. Come on. And so he literally gathered all his idols and he went down to the river and he was like, well, I don't need these anymore. Throw them all there and I'll get baptized. Now he's still in the community, but when people come to him and say, hey, you're the spiritual guy, right? That if people have problems, we can come to you. He's like, yeah, let me tell you about this awesome God. You know, last week he came and talked to me and I was telling you about all these other gods, but this God is the God of all of these gods. Let me tell you his story. Let me tell you what he does to offer hope. Let me tell you what he does to offer service, you know? And I mean, here's this Nepali witch doctor. He's now, I mean, just an evangelist who loves the Lord and threw his idols in the river, you know. And God's changing his life, you know. So I could tell you a lot more stories about this. I could tell you tons of stories. I could sit here for hours and tell you stories of Iraqis who've fallen in love with Jesus, who've been severely persecuted. One of them was actually, the kickboxing president for the entire state of Iraq. He ran the Olympic team there, actually. His entire team was killed from 7 years old all the way up to 40 years old. He was traveling separately, and because he spoke out against the government, they killed his entire team in one swipe. And they kidnapped him, where he was for 2 years tortured and beaten and abused, and they tried to get him to publicly denounce the things he said against the government live because he was a person of influence, but he didn't, and he still has scars all over his body. They broke his arms here and here, and they broke his legs in half, and he healed, and he came to Clarkston as a refugee. And I greeted him. I said, Assalamu alaikum, you know, peace be upon you. And he said, don't ever greet me that way. I was like, whoa, what's going on? He said, my people know nothing about peace. It wasn't until I came here and I met families like your family, Christians like you guys, that you know peace. Don't ever greet me that way again. Greet me with real peace, you know? And so I invited him over. I said, obviously God's doing something in his life. I've never had someone tell me not to greet him in their native tongue before, you know? Came over to our house and sitting on my floor in my living room. He said, I went to church today. We just went to a random church, and they gave us this bread. I don't know what it's for, so I put it in my pocket, you know? It's like, I still got it. And he pulls it out, and his mom's like, I got mine too. And she's digging through her coat. She pulls out this napkin. It's got this bread in it, you know? She's like, well, we don't know what it means. Everyone was eating it, and they're, you know, passing this cup around. We have no idea what it means, you know? And they're like, but they kept talking about this thing in Exodus, you know? This Passover. Will you explain that to us, you know? And I'm like, yeah, let's talk about that. And right then and there, I tell him about the Passover story, what it means for Jesus to pass over our lives and why we partake of this bread and why it's so important for us to be a part of this and partake in this with him. And he just starts crying. He's like, my family's never heard this. My family does not know this. He went on to lead about five of his family members to faith in that year, living in Clarkston. And then he ended up moving his family actually to another place in the U.S. to work alongside of other Iraqi believers to reach Iraqi Muslim refugees here in the States. You know, and God will do great things through your life if you allow it. And there's something to being obedient. Like, we're always looking for that new thing. Like, God's going to do something new. I know He's going to do something. He wants to do something crazy. I know that I'm going to read this, and I'm just going to get this crazy idea, and it's going to be awesome. But just be obedient. He said, you know, like, these are the things. Make your life available. Be someone who's life and life-giving and life-inspiring. You know, death just happens. You know, that's just going to happen. But if we make ourselves available to Jesus, and we just say, God, I know You have a plan and a purpose for my life, and I'm willing to just take one step at a time. You know, that's all it takes. Who knew? Who knew at the stoplight up the street would be some of the best principles? I would learn some of the best principles of church planning in Goochland County by just making myself available at a stoplight. So my hope and my prayer for you guys is to today honestly seek your own life and say, God, what do You want to do with my life? How am I going to make a difference in this world individually and corporately as this body He's attached me to? Because I know God will do it if you allow Him to. And I know that my story is not one that is extreme. I could give you hundreds of stories from hundreds of people who just allow Jesus to work in and through their life if you make yourself available to it. So.